Welcome to the Fantasy Football Elite Podcast. Whether you're a seasonal or daily fantasy football player, Guru Elite has the experience, knowledge, and power to make you a champion. Here's your host, Jeff Mann.
All right, welcome in, everybody. Another episode of Fantasy Football Elite right here on GuruElite.com. I'm your host, Jeff Manns. How's everybody doing today? Oh, boy, what a busy week. Lots to talk about, actually. Believe it or not, fantasy football, you guys that are listening to this podcast and that are studying up and doing your research, I don't care what anybody tells you. It's never too early to prepare for the upcoming season. I play multiple sports. If you guys are just football people, that's cool. Just so you know, I do fantasy baseball in the seasonal and daily variety. So I'm studying that as we go, as by the day. But I absolutely start my preparation in November, December the following year for the next baseball season and all that. So you cannot be too prepared, especially with the ever-changing arena we are in with sports in general, especially the NFL. By the way, I am Jeff Manns, GuruElite.com. That's where you find me. If you're listening the first time, check us out. A lot of free content right now. All our fantasy football content, for the most part, yeah, all of it's free for now. We have MMA, PGA, NASCAR, tons of baseball. We are winning money over there as well, and daily fantasy baseball every single night, man. We're just crushing it. If you don't believe me, that's cool. Check out social media. Do a hashtag Elite Mafia. That's the number sign for you, shift three for you older folks like myself. And just do Elite Mafia. See what our customers are doing. See what the people who subscribe to the site are doing. I'm sure you will be very, very impressed, and I'm sure that you can get good referrals out there. Again, don't take it from me. I work for the company. I'm CEO of the company. Take it from our customers, because we do a damn good job at providing winning lineups, winning contests, winning seasons for our folks. All right, this is episode 3 of season 2 of Fantasy Football Elite, and today we got a lot to talk about. I'm going to get into some dynasty rankings here today. If you're listening to this by chance, if you're an early riser here, maybe you're on the East Coast and you're checking it out, the podcast, early in the morning here on a Monday, you guys are probably going to beat the rankings up to the site. Likely not. My dynasty rankings, I don't think, are going to be up until midday, if not early evening, Monday. This will be May 14th. So that's when the rankings are going up. So if you listen to it beforehand, you're getting a jump start. If not, you could check them out. Again, all these podcasts are made so that you could listen to them pretty much anytime. I'll talk some news and notes as well and give some thoughts on that. But again, you could always go back. If we're doing this correctly, you guys are going to be able to go back, listen to what I'm talking about here today, and use it throughout the course of the summer months to prepare for your 2018 fantasy football leagues. So we got that. I'll unveil my top 12. I'll do the first round here today. I'll leave a little bit more for the rest of the week and going forward. Also going to talk a lot of best ball contests, ADP, things of that nature. We're going to have a lot of best ball contests going on as well. Folks, if you have questions, if you have comments, if there's topics, players, teams, coaches, schemes, systems, anything you want me to cover in future podcasts, hit me up on Twitter at Jeff_Manns, M-A-N-S, the Jeff Manns on every other social media medium there is, including Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, all those, LinkedIn for crying out loud. I don't care. Hit me up wherever you can and get your questions, your thoughts across to me. If you guys have complaints or things, like I said, I'm leaving something out or whatever, disagreements, hit me up, man. I love to have conversations with everybody. That's what we're all about over at Guru Elite. So let's get the conversation rolling. Let me start out with this. I got to get this off my chest because I've been sitting on it for a few days now. In one of our baseball live streams a few days ago, it was me, Tommy G, Jeff Collins was on that particular live stream. And on that, late in the show, Tommy G gets at me for a little bit for not I have a strong thing. Those who are new to my work, I am very much opposed to listening to broadcasts. I don't listen to my – I'm not saying I never listen to broadcasts, but I – for like football season, I have my setup, which you guys – if you scroll through my timeline a little bit on Twitter or Facebook, you'll see I have this setup, 8 televisions all set up in a row. I watch every single snap, every single game, have since the year 1999, have not missed a single live game. Also study the coaches' film and all that good stuff. And I make a point to never listen to the broadcasts. I don't like listening to broadcasters. I hate, especially dislike hometown broadcasters. There's an agenda there. There's a one-sidedness there. You're not getting a true story. I don't like it. The reason I don't like it, one of many reasons, is for one, what I get paid to do and what my career is to watch games, interpret them, read and analyze and study statistics and analytics as well. And I digest them, put them through my filtration, and then spit them out to everybody, whether it's SiriusXM radio, whether it's in print here at Guru Elite or a magazine or a radio or TV appearance that I've done in the past, Living the Fantasy, a movie, a documentary film that I was a part of as well, or here on this podcast on Fantasy Football Elite or any other shows that we do live streams for baseball here on the site and stuff. Doesn't matter. I have a job and a moral obligation to give you guys what I think and my opinions and my facts and my interpretations. And that's what's going to win you guys leagues. Not me reciting something I heard on a broadcast. And Tommy and Jeff Collins wanted to go after me about that, and that's fine. I'll never penalize somebody else for doing what they like to do, but I don't like the angles that we get from hometown broadcasters. Hometown broadcasters are terrible. Folks, I understand some of you are Steelers fans, you're diehard Packers fans, you're Raider fans. I get it. You want to hear that. That's what you're listening to. You're listening to broadcasts because you want to know more about your team. You want to know more about your players, all that good stuff. That's cool. Big thumbs up for me. What you expect, though, from you don't nobody should expect me to be a Dallas Cowboy backer and fan and fanboy. And, oh, I love the Dolphins, or I love the, you know, if you're a baseball fan, the Red Sox or the Padres, or nobody likes the Padres, but you get what I'm saying. That's not what I am here for. I'm here for fantasy advice. And the only way to do that is to not have something tarnish and infiltrate my line of thinking and tell me what to think. And that's what broadcasts are nowadays. They're awful. Majority of broadcasters, both baseball, football, and others, don't believe in analytics, in advanced science. They don't want to even correlate these topics. They think, oh, I'll see it with my eyes. I know what a great play is. Wonderful. That's good for them. And they also have talking points and sponsors they have to fulfill. Trust me, I've been parts of hometown broadcasts before and have covered hometown sports when I was in Chicago as well. And it's just, it's not what you want to be a part of. And that's not why you're here. At least, God forbid, I hope so. I hope not. So to anybody else who wonders why I'm not regurgitating information or I'm not listening to broadcasters, nothing will get in my way. Nothing. I make all the opinions you hear are mine and mine alone. The stats and things that I use, I do research them and get them from other sites like Pro Football Reference and StatCast and Baseball Savant and FanGraphs and different places like that. Obviously not the baseball ones here on this football podcast, but to hell with hometown broadcasters. That's what I'm trying to get at. So that's number one. The other thing I wanted to address before we dive into the dynasty rankings here tonight is the suspension, 4-game suspension for Mark Ingram, New Orleans Saints running back. That news came across this week. And with Ingram, 4 games, and it was pretty funny. So PED violation for Ingram. You know, his defense was he cleared it with the league first, supposedly. It wasn't on the banned substance list, yada, 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 whatever it is. Mark Ingram now is pinched, and now he's out for 4 games. That's the fact. And so, naturally, what do we do as fantasy football analysts? They, okay, what's the appeal process? Good. It's off season, you know, appeal process, what's that going to be? They ruled it within 24 hours of him filing the appeal, they already had an answer. It's like the commissioner's office was just sitting there waiting. Good, good, good. Their thumbs twiddling, waiting for him to file his appeal, and immediately said no, which is pretty unusual. They've been really taking back suspensions lately and carving a game, two games off of that, what have you. But Ingram gets nothing. So now what does that do? What does this do with us? Well, obviously, very bad news for Mark Ingram, his owners, his Dynasty League holders, and everything else. And it's great news for Alvin Kamara. On my rankings over at GuruLeet.com, I give Kamara the bump up. He is now my number five running back overall, right behind Gurley, Zeke, Bell, Saquon Barkley. That's right, Saquon. Go listen to the second episode of the season if you want more on my Saquon Barkley love. And Alvin Kamara is now number five. Ingram drops down, and my rankings on when they were posted on Monday, so hopefully the majority of you are listening after that, will reflect that he's got a drop. How far does Mark Ingram drop? Hate to say it, but he drops significantly far down. He drops into the 18 through 20 range on my latest rankings over at GuruLeet.com. The reason he falls all the way down to, I think I have him exactly at 19 right now. No, I have him 18 right now. So running back two still, but am I in? How? What's my level of interest as a running back two? Not very high. Four game suspensions, games one through four, he will not be there. All right, what does that do for us? Well, that's, we got to remember, and this is a pet peeve of mine, something I really hate. I hate when people say, well, it's, you know, it's a quarter of the season. Oh, it's a quarter of the season. And they're bitching about it. Oh, it's a quarter of the season. No, it's not a quarter of the flipping season. It's a third of the season. Because our fantasy football leagues, a standard league, has head-to-head schedule goes to 12 weeks. Now, I know a bunch have 13. Either way, close damn enough. 12 is the standard. 12-game regular season is what you play in high-stakes fantasy football leagues. You need to be in position by then. You can't have a guy who's off for the first four of those and think, oh, it's absolutely fine. It's a third of the entire season. So, yeah, you'll have them for a while. Oh, what's even more so, though? Saints are off week five. So the Saints are off week five. One through four, he's out. Week five, he's back. Week six is when we're going to get Mark Ingram back into our fantasy lineup. Now, let's assume Alvin Kamara is doing well by then. Let's say he's doing what maybe not he did last year because his fantasy points on a per-touch basis were out of control. But let's say he's still racking out the volume. Now he's getting more volume because he's the only back in town, and he's doing very well. And, oh, by the way, Mark Ingram hasn't played since the third preseason game, or maybe he plays the fourth preseason game in August. And he hasn't played since then, and we're sitting there in the middle of October buying our Halloween candy, and now we're going to think, he's going to get off the bus and be the same player he was in 2017? Hell no. His role could be significantly diminished. Don't forget, they're going to use another running back. Kamara will be the frontline guy, but Kamara wasn't used as a workhorse last year. That's why I said his production on a per-touch basis was absolutely out of control. Out of control. So, assuming he'll be the lead back, of course, but somebody is going to see time, whether it's in a third down roll, a short down roll, whatever it is, they will have another guy. What if that guy, and you look at Daniel Laskow, Boston Scott, who's more of a Darren Sproles replacement from a couple of years back, Boston Scott's more of that guy than he is Ingram or Kamara. So I don't think Boston Scott will factor in, although he might. He was a sixth-round pick this year, by the way, folks, for those who weren't sure about who the hell I'm talking about in Boston Scott, the kid from Louisiana Tech, local kid. He's very small, fast as they like, good return man and stuff like that. But at the same time, I don't think he's going to factor in much. Could on third down. He could steal a little bit. But then you get Jonathan Williams, former Bronco, former – bigger guy, a player that, that a lot of people were high on a couple years ago with the Buffalo Bills. You know, was with the Broncos last year. He was with the Buffalo Bills when he mixed time. Then he had suspension that he had to be, he had to deal with and everything else. And then it was, you know, kicked around the league. Jalen Williams is a guy who could possibly factor in. If he's running hot, Ingram might not necessarily just jump back into a predominant role, and definitely not the RB1 role. So we're talking about a guy, week six of the season, comes back, hasn't played in all these weeks, is absolutely behind Kamara and possibly even behind whether it is Laskow, Jonathan Williams, or whomever, or Boston Scott, or all three, who knows. And yeah, he'll work his way up, but he doesn't have his sea legs yet. He hasn't hit contact in 6-7 weeks. You know, it could take him a game or two. Look at Le'Veon Bell last year. Started out very cold. Didn't have a training camp or anything else. Took him to week three or four to really get going. If we're talking 2 more weeks, we're talking about missing half the fantasy season. And God forbid he gets injured or anything else like that, or does split time the whole way, you know, in a very smaller, much smaller role than he had a year ago. Ingram's impact is going to be very, very small, folks. So don't make a mistake. Don't target this guy. Don't think it's a fourth of the season. You got to get to week 16. Only two teams are playing week 16, folks. Only two teams. And yes, of course you hope to be one of them. But there's a lot of teams that have guys. Zeke Elliott had as many points as Jordan Howard last year. And on a per touch and a per game basis, Zeke Elliott blew him out of the water. But having Jordan Howard all those games got you where you needed to be. And it's a valuable asset. So for crying out loud, don't overdraft Mark Ingram. And don't underestimate both Alvin Kamara and I guess Jonathan Williams would be the guy at this point. I'm sure the Saints are going to add some depth. Sean Payton came up yesterday, which is over the weekend, on Saturday, I believe it was. And we are in the middle of May, so just for a time of reference, I think it was the 12th of May, Sean Payton comes out and says, well, we're not opposed to signing Adrian Peterson off the scrap heap again. You know, it didn't work out last year, but, you know, with Ingram out, maybe that's something they do. And maybe it's not Peterson, but there is another. They are definitely going to be looking at other options as far as running backs are concerned. Whoever that other back may be, that player has just as much interest to me as Mark Ingram does. And I know it's not going to be perceived that way in drafts, but that's the brass tacks of it all, folks. So give me the guy for the first 4 weeks that I draft in the 13th round, 12th, 13th, 14th round, way late, that could make an impact for me there, as opposed to drafting Mark Ingram in what will amount to be the 4th or 5th round now. Forget about it. No, thank you. So there you go. That's the topic of the day. Let's get into some of my dynasty rankings. Let's dive in. I'll give you the top 12 here on the third episode. I'll get into 13 through 24 next time around. And what we're going to do, you know what, here's what I'll do. I'm going to go over my top 12. So my ultimate first round, and I'm going to take it from a strictly skill position situation, skill position leagues. All right. That's what I'm going to go for. And when I'm done, at the end of today's podcast, I will talk about my own dynasty league that I'm in, a long-running one with all the hosts and people and executives over at SiriusXM, and I'll talk about how those leagues have done. That is a full IDP. We start 11 defensive players. It's absolutely – it's treacherous to navigate and to manage the roster in this dynasty league. But I'll go through who I took. I'll go through who the others took, just so you can get a reference for those, especially for those who are playing in IDP style formats. I definitely want to talk IDP. That's one thing also got to say, folks, we're going to be here for you all year long, fantasy football wise, myself and the crew at Guru Elite. And I'm an IDP guy. Like, I don't just play IDP, but I absolutely do it. Now, I don't like having 10, 11 defensive starters. I think it's nonsense. I think the ideal setup is using 3 IDP players, eliminate team defense, eliminate kicker, and add 1 extra position to your leagues, and have 3 IDP, 1 lineman, 1 linebacker, 1 member of the secondary. It's the perfect transition from doing only quarterback, running back, receiver, tight end in that to doing a little bit of IDP, making the defense side of the football worth it. So IDP questions always welcome by me, ladies and gentlemen. So at @Jeff_Manns, M-A-N-S, remember that. The Jeff Manns and other social media outlets, hit me up there. All right, so no-brainer at the top spot, right? Absolutely nobody should be shocked. Saquon Barkley, of course. Saquon Barkley, to me, he has a legitimate case to be the number four overall pick in redraft, let alone dynasty. So the real question with Saquon is, what's the value of that number one spot? What's the value of having the number one, obtaining the number one pick in a dynasty style format? And this year, I think it's significant. I think it's very, very good. And if to obtain, that's a big chip, as we say in the business. That's a chip. That's the equivalent. Like I said, that man, that guy, Saquon Barkley, I'm fourth overall on my running back board. He is fifth overall on my overall board right now. But let's just, no matter where you're going to rank him, I would say Saquon Barkley is a top 10 overall pick this year. Top 10 overall pick. So that number one dynasty, in most years, that number one pick in Dynasty League, it'll be valuable, but it'll be a 12, let's say it's 13 to 20 overall pick value normally. This year, it could be a top five. And like I said, on my board, it is a top five right now pick. That's significant and substantial. So he's number one, no question about it. Two is very difficult. Who's the second pick? Well, you know, I value running backs over wide receivers, okay? Quarterbacks, they take a while to develop. They take a while to transition. Yes, we saw Carson Wentz in his second year. He did not lead the Eagles to a Super Bowl, but he was on his way to. And we saw big steps from Jared Goff there too. None of the quarterbacks. I don't think there's a quarterback. I'll get to it later on in my rankings here, but they're not there. So to me, young running backs are the way to go. If you have that second pick in a dynasty, that's the way to go. Now, normally, I think, you know, 2 years ago, I remember having Michael Thomas in that number two spot. That panned out very, very well. He had a good rookie season. He's, you know, star in the league at this given point in time. But to me, there are no wide receivers really worth that number two spot. I love Calvin Ridley. I like him a great deal. I think some other guys. I love Sutton going into the draft. I like the landing spots of guys like DJ Moore and Anthony Miller. They land in good spots. You know I love DJ Chark. If you don't, this is your first podcast, you can go back and listen to episode one of the season. And I went from 6 to midnight with DJ Chark. I'm a big fan of his. Might hear him tonight, actually. Just might. We'll see. But there's a bunch of receivers that I like that I'm targeting in redraft and in dynasty. But to me, they're not number two overall guys, not even Calvin Ridley yet. So my number two will surprise a lot of folks, and it's Royce Freeman of the Denver Broncos. It's a tough call. It's not a landslide. I think their cases can be made for a number of these players and number of the running backs specifically. The reason Freeman is my guy is, for one, they cleared away C.J. Anderson. Devontae Booker is clearly not an every down back. He's just not that guy. Whereas I think Royce Freeman is. He's when you look at Royce Freeman, he's built like a running back, right? 5'11 and 3/4, 225 pounds, you know, big, strong arms, big upper body. You know, he's stocky. It's what you like to see. Yeah, he doesn't run a 4.3 4.40, but he catches the football out of the backfield. Played an up-tempo offense at Oregon, conditioning as well. For a bigger, thicker guy, you tend to worry about conditioning a little bit. None of that playing in the Oregon offense, even though, you know, he was swapped out here and there. Crazy, great combine numbers across the board. Nothing that stands out huge. But it just says featured running back in the NFL all over him. And what I like the most is, well, I like the build. I like the size, the strength, the speed. I like the opportunity. And we have to remember that. And, okay, yes, I'm Dynasty League rankings. Yes, this is. But we need an impact. Because, folks, be honest with yourselves out there. And I'm going to give this lecture several times throughout the course of this early going in the season and as we get in the season, is one, the biggest problem with Dynasty League players is we draft for 3 years down the line, and it's foolish. It's stupid. It's ignorant to do so. Stop drafting as if you want to win the 2020 championship. Sure, we want to win 2020, but let's win 2018 first, and let's figure that out, even if you're in a major rebuild. And I'm going to talk to you guys later about my SiriusXM Dynasty League, and I'm in a rebuild there. It was very competitive 2 years ago, fell off last year and had a total – or no, last year I had a total blowout. So fell off 2 years ago, and so I'm rebuilding, and that's a deep league where you start over 20 players a game and all that at 40-man rosters, and it's crazy. But I still want to win, and I'm still attacking right now. As I want, as much as I'm rebuilding with an eye towards the future, I want guys who will impact now. The worst thing in Dynasty Leagues is when you're caught in that situation where you really like the guy, and I really like this quarterback or this receiver or this tight end, positions that do not fulfill us instantly, especially in fantasy sports where running backs do. We're waiting on these guys 2-3 years down the line. And what happens is you took a chance on a player. He didn't evolve that fast, and now you have lineup decisions to make. This guy is barely playing. Yes, he's skilled, yada, yada, yada. And you end up cutting him or dropping him eventually for more the next version of that player. And what do you know? It's only 3 years in the league. He's only 25, 26 years old, and boom, he's having a breakout season on somebody else's team. Happens all the time. So don't make those mistakes. Don't play for too far down the road. Have an eye towards the future, even if you're rebuilding, but try to win now if you at all can. I think Royce Freeman is the guy. So, again, like everything, the opportunity is so important for him there as well. Denver spent a third-round pick on him, a high third-round pick. They obviously like the kid. And I love this offensive line in Denver. And some people may say, why? What do you? How do you like the Denver offense? Garrett Bowles, a guy who got hurt last year. And you remember in the early going, Denver's offense was really cooking. Really, really cooking. And Garrett Bowles, first-round pick from a year ago, was manhandling that left side. And boom, he goes down. They brought in Ronald Leary from the Cowboys last year as well to improve the offensive line. What happened? He got hurt. And the middle portion of the season wasn't the same player when he came back late. They have Valdir from the Arizona Cardinals, or former Cardinal guy. They also have Melnick Watson, so some depth. Elijah Wilkins is also there along the on the right side. Watson could play either left or right, so they have a little depth here at along the offensive line, and I like it. I especially like running behind Garrett Bowles and Ronald Leary. I like the left side of Denver, and I think Royce Freeman's going to be able to do that and do that very, very well. He's a three-down back, too, and more durable. That's what gets him over the player that's ultimately my third overall pick in Dynasty, and that's Darius Geis. Now, is Geis a better talent? Yes. I think Geis is a better talent. There's a couple of reasons why I have Freeman ahead of Geis, and why, quite frankly, Geis, I gave him a favor because of his skill, because of his what we thought of him going into the draft. I gave him a slight upgrade. He could have fallen all the way to fifth on my board here quite easily. I like the landing spot in Washington, but you do have some players in Washington that could creep into his output and his production. And the one on the forefront is Chris Thompson. I've never been a Chris Thompson guy. Folks that listen to me understand I never draft undersized running backs. Okay. I very rarely draft undersized running backs. I always hated Darren Sproles and Danny Woodhead. I always said that they were going to get hurt, and I was right every single frickin' time. Every time with both of those guys. 1 year that Woodhead, that I said to stay away from him, and he had a decent enough year. That was it. I've been against him for years, documented to the high. I screamed and yelled on SiriusXM radio to a national audience, talking about my hatred for him and Darren Sproles. And sure enough, these guys have never panned out. And the Chris Thompsons, as great as he was doing last year, I never got involved other than in a daily sense. Why? Because he gets hurt. That's what happens to small running backs. That's what happens. You can't be surprised that that happens. Now, Fat Rob Kelly, played well last year. And Samaje Perine was a guy they were high on and showed flashes, but also was, as much as he showed flashes, Perine wet the bed. Like, he had the opportunity, couldn't run with it, which is why the Redskins ended up with Darius Geis in the first place. But Geis should have been a first-round pick. He slips to the later in the second round, and even that, the Redskins even weren't high on Darius Geis. They were actually trying to draft another running back before Geis, but he was taken off the board, and then Geis became available. I think it was Rashad Penny was the one, yeah, that they were trying to trade up for Penny instead, and then Seattle ended up taking him in the first round. So the Redskins end up saying punting on the running back spot until the later on in the second round. They get Geis, but Geis has some off-the-field problems. He's yelling and screaming at coaches while at the scouting combine. Wasn't the friendliest of guys as well through the entire draft process. I don't give a flying F how nice and cuddly he is. I want him to play football. I want him to be that barreling running back, knocking over guys, picking up yardage after contact, and getting in the end zone. And he's got a good opportunity in Washington. He should be the lead back. But again, Perine and Kelly, they're still there. Don't know what to make of it. I think Geis is better, but is off the field. If he rubs coaches the wrong way, if he can't pass protect, things like that, it's going to keep him off the field. And then we got third down problems with Chris Thompson, where I don't see the same thing for Royce Freeman. That's why I have Freeman over Geis at the 2-3 spot. Number four on my overall pick, I'm still going running back here, folks, and I'm going Rashad Penny from the Seahawks. I did not like Penny going into this draft process. It's not that I hated him. I just had him ninth on my board in terms of running backs, and he ended up being the second running back off the board. Now, whatever. Who cares what Jeff Manns thinks? And yes, you're right. 5'11", 220. The thing that stands out the most about Penny, he did run a 4.46, so slightly faster than Royce Freeman. It's from San Diego State. He was a workhorse over at San Diego State. The thing that I'm intrigued by the most is how much the Seahawks seem to like him. The Seahawks had significant problems and issues that they needed to address specifically along their offensive line, and they straight up refused to do it. The Seahawks just said, no, they're not upgrading their offensive line. The thing that they should have done is upgrade the offensive line, bring in a running back in a second, third, or fourth round, and I think that would have brought that running back into a better spot overall. But they decided they liked Rashad Penny too much. Fair enough. He's a first-round pick. He looks the role of a feature back in the NFL. You know, knocks on Penny reasons I didn't like the pick necessarily. Mostly it was because of value and things like that. But I also think he's a very upright runner. He seems to he's all about go. There's no start and stop in him. He runs up his blockers a little too often. He's going to have to get used to letting the play develop. Seattle is a good landing spot for him because it's pretty much a straight one-cut style of offense. For him to run through, it's nothing, you know, they're not doing a lot of counters and traps and things that cause the offensive line to move around that he has to sit back and wait. So it is a good fit as far as that is concerned, but he'll miss secondary cutback lanes all the damn time, which is something that previous runners in Seattle did very well, most notably, of course, Marshawn Lynch. But you got that, and then you also have the fact that, listen, they are crowd. That's a crowded backfield. I understand, they drafted a runner in the first round. They got to love him, and they're going to give him the ball and everything else. They drafted three running backs, 2 years ago? Yeah, in 2016, right, when they brought in ProSize and they brought in all these guys. And those guys, Alex Collins was brought in then. He's now starring in Baltimore. So it doesn't seem like Seattle Seahawks is a very long leash with running backs. And you still got ProSize there. You still got Chris Carson, who they supposedly loved. Remember, they absolutely loved him before. And J.D. McKissick's there, who picked up a ton of third down work. Whatever reason, I'm willing to say, and by me ranking Rashad Penny fourth, I am saying, yes, I believe that Seattle is almost painted themselves into a corner. They have to give him the rock. They have to make him a feature back. I agree. But behind what offensive line? They made a trade for Duane Brown, which was a very good trade for them last year. But this offensive line, they brought in DJ Fluker. This is a bad offensive line, guys. Real bad. Like bottom five in the NFL for sure. And with that being said, without a dominating wide receiver, without a tight end presence anymore, I wonder what this offense is going to be in Seattle. And not only that, I think the Seahawks, they lost so much with their on their defense. And especially you lose a leader like Richard Sherman and a guy like Bennett on the and the defensive line. This is going to be a bad defense. And a defense is going to score down a lot, going to have to play from behind a lot. So how much are they going to be able to use ball control and running on the ground, smash mouth, all that stuff, especially with the offensive line that won't be productive doing it? I just don't see a lot of instant success. Now, still, since it's dynasty, maybe 2 years, 3 years, we see a bigger turnaround from Penny, all that. Wonderful, but definitely not ahead of Geis or Freeman on my board yet. And I actually could have dropped him even farther, to be quite honest. But I do think the mere opportunity this year is what keeps him in my top four. Number five, first position other than running back, and I give it to Calvin Ridley. Calvin Ridley was the number one wide receiver going into the draft. That should not have changed, and it didn't change, obviously, in the draft or in people's thinking. So I'm a big fan of Calvin Ridley. He wasn't as tall as I thought he was. He looked taller playing at Alabama. But the fact that he's a Crimson Tide guy and he goes to where Julio Jones is, I still have worry whether or not Julio Jones is long for the NFL. He took down all his Falcon stuff from social media. People constantly underappreciate that aspect, and they say, oh, it was because he's doing promotions. Julio Jones is a guy that will not play much longer in the NFL. I've talked to his teammates, former teammates, coaches, and former coaches. Every one of them says they love Julio Jones. They love Julio. But he's not a football guy. That's what you rarely see a superstar player not be a football guy. Like, he's just not into football. Football's not his thing, if you will. He spends off weeks not checking out watching games on Sundays. He's out fishing and doing other things. Like, he'll watch Alabama games on TV, but he's just not that guy. So I wonder if this pick was forced knowing that Julio's not long for it. Now, all indications are Julio's good to go for 2018. So that's where we have to draft Calvin Ridley at least for the future. But Matt Ryan's still got time there. Sarkisian knows it. Steve Sarkisian was Calvin Ridley's offense coordinator at Alabama last year, don't forget. And you rarely see that. And that's something we always need to pay attention to. You see college coaches or former college coaches skip and pass over their former players, that means they weren't all that enamored with them and don't think they're going to be pros. In this case, obviously Sarkisian and the entire Atlanta Falcon organization do believe that. And the fact that Ridley's going to be able to play his rookie year and possibly second year in seeing only single coverage, pretty damn good. Pretty damn good. You got a running threat there, great offensive line, great quarterback. Julio Jones on the other side. Mohamed Sanu that could play either outside or inside, who's tall and a red zone option. You're going to see Ridley be able to ingrain himself into the NFL level, seeing nothing but second or third corners at the most. That's a hell of a way to develop for a kid with his skill set. So I think there's a lot here that I like, and he's my number five. Other choices. Number six overall on my Dynasty League board, I have Anthony Miller of the Chicago Bears. Now, folks, I mentioned earlier, local, I'm just not a big fan of local media and local people, and everybody wants to their homerisms and things like that. I need to get out of the way that I am a Chicago Bears fan, grew up in the city of Chicago, covered the White Sox professionally, been a White Sox season ticket holder, Bear fan, all that good stuff. I take that shit out of it. That don't mean nothing to me. The fact that it's Bears or any other team to me means nothing when I'm doing my rankings. Absolutely nothing. As much as I would like the Chicago Bears organization to do well and all that great stuff, not my cup of tea. And I'm not going to say I hope Anthony Miller does good just because of that. What I do like about Anthony Miller is that this Bears offense, now in the hand of Matt Nagy and Mark Helfrich on the offensive side, they're setting up a situation. They're going to play three wide receivers a lot. They're going to run the football. They're going to throw the football a quick hit and passing, which is why Anthony Miller was selected in the first place. They go out and get Allen Robinson to play on the outside. They have Taylor Gabriel that could play in or out and be a scat back there as well. So it's going to be another positive situation. You get Trey Burton along the offense at the tight end position that could stretch the middle of the field. Now, all of a sudden, Miller probably working the slot, going to be able to work that middle along with him. That's a good setup. Huge hands. A lot of my colleagues at SiriusXM are very, very high on Anthony Miller throughout this entire process. He's got a hell of a highlight reel from the University of Memphis. If you YouTube him and search him and some of his amazing grabs, he's got tremendous hands, great speed, not the ideal size kind of player, but that's why he's going to play on the inside. And we got a developing quarterback here in Mitch Trubisky who could fall in love with this guy. This could be a nice connection for a number of years. Looking at the other wide receivers, and to me, there's a couple more talented wide receivers that were in this 2018 NFL draft, but none of them went to situations that are as ascending as this offense is right now here in Chicago, nor did they get the opportunity that Anthony Miller will see in 2018 and beyond here with the Chicago Bears. So I'm very optimistic here. I'm very intrigued by Anthony Miller. I'm very interested to see his development with Mitch Trubisky and how he fits with Allen Robinson and all the guys in that all of a sudden pretty stockpiled wide receiver. And there's some real talent there. So all that being said, I think Anthony Miller, pretty humble kid. He's a strong kid. He could run after the catch. It's a lot to like here for Anthony Miller in this situation. Number seven on my board, going back to running backs here, and it's Nick Chubb. Again, I like Nick Chubb a lot coming into the draft. In fact, where was he? My third overall pick, I believe, going in, or my third running back, I should say, at least coming into this draft process. I was extraordinarily high on him. I really, really like Nick Chubb in college. I'll never forget when I first heard the name, really. Nick Chubb is when Todd Gurley got hurt at the University of Georgia, and I said, well, they're screwed. Well, there goes Georgia down the drain, and this kid, Nick Chubb, comes in. I'm like, God damn, this kid's better than Todd Gurley. I contend that he was. I will contend that Nick Chubb was in a more electrifying runner than Todd Gurley ever was at the University of Georgia. Now then, boom, injury, everything else. Nick Chubb misses most of the season. And he lost a little bit of speed last year. Sony Michel ended up coming in, splitting time with him, and he looked better at times than Nick Chubb. Thing about Chubb is he's got that it factor as a running back. What I mean by that is it's on the hips, I think. He's able to angle himself and hit the – he's got great start-stop ability, number one. He angles his hips to avoid big contact. And to avoid the, you know, run, he runs through arm tacklers and things like that. And I think that kind of stuff really represents at the next level. At the NFL level, you need that hip movement. You need to be able to run through the arm tackles at the line of scrimmage to get in the secondary or to get around the edge, either way. And Nick Chubb presents that option. Now, the thing that sucks is he goes to Cleveland, and I'm very bullish on the Cleveland Browns this year. Hell, I liked what they did last year before this draft, before bringing in Jarvis Landry and Tyrod Taylor and everybody else. Yes, they were 0-16, but I thought they were a pretty darn good team to be 0-16. Probably the best we'll ever see in the history of the NFL, to be quite honest. But hopefully you don't see a lot of 0-16 teams. But he's got Carlos Hyde to contend with. My thing is this. If you're in a keeper league or dynasty league and you have Hyde, Nick Chubb's an automatic first-round pick. No, he's your guy. Unless you can get Saquon, if you have Hyde, lock it up. Nick Chubb should be your second overall pick or third overall pick if you have Carlos Hyde. If you don't, That's why I have him here at 7 overall. In a redraft league, I'm going to, as of now, which is May, I'm in the camp of I will draft both Hyde and Chubb on one team, handcuff them together, let them fight it out and sort it out at training camp for the Cleveland Browns. But I want to be a part of this backfield because I think it's talented. They upgraded offensive line last year, and I think they're really going places, especially with Todd Haley as their offensive coordinator, who came over from Pittsburgh. And what has Pittsburgh running backs done over the year? Oh, pretty good, huh? Yeah. Well, guess what? Not just Le'Veon Bell. Look at D'Angelo Williams. Look at all these. They had several guys come in Pittsburgh that did that put up fantasy numbers, and that was all Todd Haley's offense. So I like Nick Chubb a great deal. Number 8 on the board, we'll go Ronald Jones the second. Straight, another guy from USC, straight up runner. I think his size and running style is what really put me off going through the draft process. I was not high on Ronald Jones, and obviously I'm not that high on him now. He went into a great situation. The Buccaneers took him after losing Doug Martin and Charles Sims this past offseason. There's just nobody to contend with. Ronald Jones given the job. So it's a depth play at 8 overall in a dynasty draft. I'm okay with it. I'm not expecting stardom. I'm not expecting a ton of per-game production from Ronald Jones the second. I think he's an injury risk and a significant one, because, or a, possibly a ball security risk, because he's got that huge target area. When you have a big torso as a running back, you present a great area for opposing defenders to tackle you from and hit you at, right? And when you put the ball in the middle of that, they're aiming for that, and a lot of times a helmet, elbow, shoulder, whatever gets hit on the ball, and it creates ball security issues. On the other side, maybe he holds the ball right and he holds onto it fine, and they hit him just below that, which is ribs, sternum injuries, things like that. Either way, I just don't like the running style with Ronald Jones. The opportunity is good. It's not a great offensive line, but it's improving, and they will be better running the football than they were a year ago. But that's not saying very much. And that's why Ronald Jones ranks there for me. Number 9, DJ Moore, back to the wide receivers. I like DJ Moore. I did not have him in my top 3, or I did not have him in my top. Yeah, he's 4th on my board. So going into the draft, the landing spot was good. The Panthers thought enough of him to make him the number 1 wide receiver off the board. My problem with landing Carolina is there's 24.2% of the incomplete passes that Cam Newton throws are missed high. That means he's overthrowing them, too high for the wide receiver to get. 24% his incompletions. Remember, that's half of his incompletions are thrown over somebody's head. And then the Panthers decide, oh, we're going to go out and get an under 6-foot wide receiver. Don't understand that. Do not quite understand that. There's two sides to it. On one hand, that means, God, they really like DJ Moore. Evidently, they really, really love DJ Moore. So that's a good thing. But the bad thing is, can Cam Newton hit him? I worry about that on a pretty significant level. I mean, he's a run after the catch guy. He get downfield. Remember, Norv Turner is in this offense, and he brings his West Coast blend. What he does, he spreads the field and runs the football, throws the running backs. Okay, good. Sounds good for Christian McCaffrey and the newly acquired C.J. Anderson. And then he also spreads the field. Norv Turner will throw the ball. He will force his quarterbacks to throw the ball downfield. One of the problems he had in Minnesota with Sam Bradford and companies, they want to dink and dunk, and they would always sell out for the short passes, the high percentage passes. Norv Turner wants you to air it out once, twice a game. He's going to force you throw it down the field just to keep the safeties and corners honest. And maybe that's what this pick is more about. DJ Moore stretching the field, getting down there, being that Steve Smith early in his career guy, speed guy, that just stretches it out deep and allows everybody else to work underneath with Greg Olsen and CMC and the like. That doesn't lead to a lot of fantasy. As much as it's good for an offense and it's a good design, it's not going to make him a regular fantasy contributor. So I think there'll be big plays for DJ Moore. I worry about the accuracy. I worry about Cam finding him. I like the offense a lot more in Carolina than I did under Mike Shula, but I just don't see the fit here with DJ Moore. They drafted Curtis Samuel. That didn't work out last year. It feels almost like they tried to chase that here with Moore, and I think DJ is a better player, but I'm not expecting big fantasy contributions in 2018. But again, still a first-round pick, to say at least, number 9 on my board. Number 10. This will be a little controversial because I have Baker Mayfield there. I'm not proud of that. I don't believe in drafting quarterbacks in the first round normally in dynasty drafts. But you will see when I talk about my SiriusXM draft here in a moment, I have literally no quarterbacks at all in this league. Absolutely none. You know, so that creates a bit of a problem for me. That creates, you know, major issue with, okay, I need somebody. And I think there are a number of teams, and this is a 16-team league that I'm in. If you guys are in similar situations, we have to attack the quarterback position at some point. And Mayfield's the top guy going into this. He was not my top quarterback going into the draft. He was my third quarterback going in the draft, but I think he landed in the spot. Being the number one overall pick, he's guaranteed a starting role, and I think it'll come this year. And they surrounded him with talent. I mentioned the offensive line being good. The running backs are fantastic with Hyde and Chubb. You got Jarvis Landry signed to a long-term deal. Josh Gordon's supposedly off the smoky smoke and ready to do some damage. You got Corey Coleman there and David Njoku. This is a talented offense. And Mayfield's going into a real good situation, in my opinion. And again, Hugh Jackson and Todd Haley is their offensive minds, the guy who could develop very, very quickly. So I don't think Mayfield has the best upside of any quarterback in this draft, but he's the surest thing. He's definitely going to get an opportunity, and I think he's got the best opportunity to play soonest as well, which is why he's number 10 on my board. My number 11 tight end, top tight end on the board, is Mike Gesicki. Gesicki is one of few pass catchers. I just talked about Jarvis Landry going to Cleveland. There's nobody here. There's absolutely nobody here for the Miami Dolphins. There's no pass catchers. Devontae Parker. I'm sorry. I'll never forgive myself. This is the wrong Devontae. There's just nobody to catch the football in Miami, and it will be interesting to see how much Gesicki's on the field. They liked him. They already had rookie mini camps, and he showed very, very well. Adam Gase and Clyde Christensen was talking him up. So I think he's the number one tight end right now. And that number one tight end, it's a position of need. It's not a lot of tight ends make a huge impact in year one, but the ones that do are the ones that have to because there's nobody else around them. Think Evan Ingram a year ago. Evan Ingram didn't come into the league as he was going to be a stud player at all. Quite the contrary. They weren't counting on much from him at all in New York, and the opportunity, though, presented himself, and that's what happened. And I think it's similar with Gesicki. So he is my number 11 overall pick in dynasty leagues. And my number 12, and we're going to stop it there, and I'll give my next 12 on our next podcast for Dynasty Leagues. And, of course, you can go to guruelite.com to check them out. But number 12, Nyheim Hines of the Indianapolis Colts. They came out in rookie minicamp and said they absolutely love his hands. Supposedly he dazzled. I still think I'm an optimistic Marlon Mack owner, but Hines is a guy because of the improvements along this Colts offensive line. Getting Andrew Luck back will be a great thing for them as well. Hines is a very interesting play. The Colts are going to go with either Mack or Hines. One of these guys is going to win the feature role and could be a three-down back. So even if he has to earn it and he's in there originally on third downs and catching the football, Hines is a name you need to know, and you need to be aware of what a good fantasy situation this Indianapolis Colts backfield could be with the offensive line upgrades and getting their damn quarterback back. here in 2018. So those are my top 12. Agree, disagree, the Jeff Manns on Snapchat, Instagram, Facebook, at Jeff underscore Manns, M-A-N-S, on Twitter as well. You could always hit us up in the chat rooms over at GuruElite.com. Our football chat is not up yet. It will be up come June, so we'll be there eventually. Post messages, whatever you got to do to get through to me. Hopefully you guys are enjoying the podcast. Want to know what you guys think of these podcasts as well. It's some good feedback, mostly good. And I want negatives. Where's the negative at? Guys got to get mean. Talk about it. Man, you're too slow. You're not screaming enough. You're not saying this. I want to hear more about this team or that player, whatever. I'm more than happy to do it, folks, talking football with you a couple times a week here leading into the fantasy football drafting season. Talk to you about my SiriusXM Dynasty League. Here, real quick. My league, it's a 16-teamer. First round went like this. Saquon Barkley. Now, I had the third overall pick. All right. So that's – I just want to document that. And third overall pick, it means I finished very bad last year, which I did. Told you, rebuilding season for me. I have zero quarterback. My quarterback last year was Jay Cutler. Like, that was my quarterback. Josh McCown and Jay Cutler. Saquon Barkley, Darius Geis go 1 and 2. So – stay true. Just like I told you guys, Royce Freeman was my selection at the third overall pick. Rashad Penny, 4. Sony Michel, 5. I think that's a terrible overpay. Personally, Kerryon Johnson, don't like him either. He was the 6th. Nick Chubb at 7 went off the board. I think that's a fine pick right there. Ronald Jones goes. I understand that. I would have went in a different direction than Jones, but I'm okay with that. 9th went DJ Moore. Okay with that. Christian Kirk, though, going 10. Before Calvin Ridley, beyond all comprehension for me, Calvin Ridley does go 11. Michael Gallup way too early at 12. Anthony Miller went 13th. Bradley Chubb, remember, we play defense, and we have 11 defensive starters in this league. Bradley Chubb goes 14. Cortland Sutton goes 15. That's an overpay in my opinion as well. Lamar Jackson at 16. I will be talking Lamar Jackson, folks. Those of you who listen to the first couple podcasts know I like Lamar Jackson a ton. But I don't think he will be in next week's episode in my 13 through 24 overall rankings, because I don't see when the hell he's going to play. Baker Mayfield or Lamar Jackson was number 16th overall pick. Second round wound up with Baker Mayfield, Mike Gesicki, Roquan Smith, who was my pick, inside linebacker of the Chicago Bears at 3rd, Sam Darnold, James Washington, Josh Rosen, Tremaine Edmonds, Deron Payne, Leighton Vander Esch, DJ Chark, Derwin James, great value play all the way at the 11th pick of the second round. Rashawn Evans, Mason Rudolph, Dante Pettis, Traquan Smith, and Kalen Ballage were the end of the second round. So that's how it went in that SiriusXM league as well. All right, folks, that's going to do it for today's podcast. Appreciate you guys coming out. Tell a friend about us. Get in contact any way you possibly can. Looking forward to talking some fantasy football with y'all. Till next time, this is Jeff Manns. Have a great week, everybody.